Blog Talk Radio.
Ron Edwards of the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the beleaguered and embattled Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the state of Minnesota. Welcome to tonight's program. My co-host, Mr. Allen, will not be with us. Hopefully he'll be returning at some point in time in September or something like that. But information, the flow of information, the flow of knowledge, wisdom, and etc. must continue. So we hope that our listening audience internationally, domestically, and locally will certainly stay with us tonight as we take a look at an embattled city, the city of Minneapolis. It is not a very present picture here in the Twin Cities. In fact, the media attempting to now downplay after indicating that Furman Blevins, 31-year-old African-American, gunned down by police on the 23rd day of June, 28th. We want to take a look at the circumstances, the events, and some information that has been withheld for those of you in the broader community, from the media, if you will, some intentionally, some out of ignorance, if you will. Media really not putting forth the effort to really find out everything that's going on. But first of all, let me bring my listening audience, if you will, up to speed with regards to an interesting meeting that took place in City Hall at 2 p.m. Central Daylight Savings Time, involving Minneapolis City Council in a packed City Council chamber. When you say packed, you mean that it's standing room only. That means close to 100 people are in the council chambers and others in the hallway. A situation that became volatile, if you will, with regards to exchanges between members of the community and some of the council members, particularly Green Party member Cam Gordon, who also caucuses with the Democrats in the Minneapolis City Council, which has been very advantageous to him over the last decade. It became very ugly. In fact, some people referred to you as a snake, if you will, in your efforts to put together what you and some others thought was a master plan to oust current Chief Nadero Arredondo, first African-American in the 150 years or better of the Minneapolis Police Department. We first talked about that on this program, our television programs, and in our columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder at the end of 2017. If it had not been for then council member / council president Barb Johnson, Cam, you and your forces would have been able to prevail, block the recommendation of appointment of Arredondo as chief of Minneapolis department, and in fact moved now assistant chief Jules, who at that time was in the precinct in the fourth so-called notorious and legendary fourth precinct in North Minneapolis. Barb Johnson blocked that. People need to know that. People need to understand that. Whatever you may think about Barb Johnson, she was in support of Rondo. She was in support of an African-American for the first time at Minneapolis becoming chief of the police department and et cetera. It has been a tough haul for Chief Arredondo. He seems to continue, though, to enjoy the support of Mayor Jacob Fry, who has also been blindsided by the following. quietly and even without notification to the president of the city council. We have a 13-member city council. We have what is called a strong council, weak mayor form of government, and that's predicated on those things that the council can do, those things the mayor can do, what the council can't do, what the mayor can't do, quote unquote. And so consequently, the identification tag of strong council, weak mayor. There are only a couple departments that the mayor has direct supervisory control over. Police department is one, fire department is the other, and he has supervisory control over the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and has a joint powers agreement as it pertains to the city coordinator, who is actually the chief administrator for the functional activities and departments of the departments of the city of Minneapolis. And so it was no surprise that in October and November of last year, this columnist was informed that there was a plan afoot to block Arredondo from becoming chief of the department, if you will. We repeat again, Barb Johnson, who unfortunately was defeated in the election in November of last year, which she held the line, if you will. She kept the council together. In fact, it was a unanimous vote, but there were a lot of council members, five to be exact, who were holding their nose and, of course, were going back to the drawing board. The drawing board became the following, that there be a change to the charter of the city of Minneapolis. The charter, of course, guides the city, if you will, dictates to the city, if you will, provides, quote-unquote, legal justification for the city of Minneapolis to exist, the Minneapolis City Charter. The city charter is the instrument that points out and indicates that the mayor shall have authority, supervisory, if you will, appointing authority, et cetera, as we said just earlier, over the police department, fire department, and the civil rights department, which basically in many respects is insignificant, if you will. And so the plan was put into play to take that portion of the city charter and put it on the ballot in November. Requires a specific series of activities, if you will, resolutions, and et cetera. A month ago, Cam Gordon, quote-unquote, brought forward without prior notification to the president of the city council, who is a Democrat of the same party, white female, if you will, as well as the executive committee of the Minneapolis city government, which includes the mayor, council president, council vice president, and one other, if you will. Gordon felt that he had the votes. In the preliminary voting, it appears that he did. He had 10 votes to force through the issue of bringing this charter change. And by the way, is really hard, if you will, and I'm not sure that this group of council members have the intellectual ability to really pull it off. But the signal that was being sent to the broader constituency in the city of Minneapolis is that the Negro, quote-unquote, will not run the police department. By the way, the Police Federation's president and their leadership were in on this. They knew about it. They've been doing things to undermine Chief Arredondo. They've been spreading rumors, propaganda, and et cetera, against his franchise, against his stewardship, if you will. The Star Tribune, the largest paper in the state, has been more inclined to ignore what is actually happening and what the plan initially was that was stopped by then Council President Barb Johnson, was to go outside or pretend to go outside the city of Minneapolis to look for a quote-unquote outside chief, something similar to what has been happening in Seattle, Washington, which blew up in the face of the mayor there, former U.S. attorney for the Western District of Washington, the mayor came out looking real bad, and the African-American female, Carmen Best, was brought back off the heap, if you will. And a couple of weeks ago, we refer you to the Seattle Times, the mayor reversed herself. Those of the council in Seattle, Washington, reversed themselves, and et cetera. It is clear to me that Cam Gordon and others had been watching the Seattle situation. In fact, a ranking officer, African-American, by the name of Edward Frizzell, was, in fact, interviewed for the position. But after the collapse of the master plan in Seattle, Carmen Best was identified as being the person that would be become the permanent chief. Now, the situation here is rather interesting with regards to permanency, if you will, because Chief Arredondo is finishing out the term of the previous chief, Janae Harto, the first Native American to become police chief in a major city of this size, if you will. Actually was an excellent chief, was forced out by the now-departed mayor, Betsy Hodges, in a stunning upset in which brought Jacob Fry into the position of mayor of the city of Minneapolis. And so today, as an example, the conspirators came together under the pretense of having a public hearing. Everyone was limited unless you were pro Cam Gordon and his crew. You were limited to 2 minutes. Things became hostile right at the very beginning. Things began to rupture, if you will, and it was not a very pretty picture. It'll be interesting, my friends, for those of you in our local audience, to see how the Star Tribune writes the story, if you will. We noticed already on the 6 o'clock news here in Minneapolis that the media stations, the four large stations, if you will, went real soft with regards to anything happening in the chamber. When I say chamber, I'm talking in terms of the council chambers afternoon, if you will. Sources have indicated, we listened to some of the discussions by link, if you will. It was ugly, and there was a lot of tension, if you will, and of course, members and supporters of the Thurman Blevins Coalition, the young man shot and killed on the 23rd of June in North Minneapolis along the 4800 block. Actually, it started on the 4800 block of Camden. He was killed about a block and a half away. All this becomes rather germane based on what happened last night, which was not given the kind of spread that you would have thought when protesters, a little over 200 protesters, shut down the light rail, blocked access to the Minnesota Twins baseball game at Target Field, as well as a international soccer match that was taking place at the U.S. Bank Stadium / home of the quote-unquote Minnesota Vikings. There was basically a peaceful demonstration last night, so there was a scuffle between an African-American woman and a Caucasian woman who signed saying, support for Thurman. And, of course, the sister did respond by throwing a really a powerful right hand, knocking the Caucasian woman off of her feet, et cetera. But the white female declined to press any charges. Now, everyone is trying to stay away from the volatility. I understand that there are some of the leaders out there that don't like that term, but it's a fact, and you could see it, particularly if you listen to the younger African-Americans in our city, if you will. There is a volatility that is raising. Also, this same group that put on the march last night, if you will, shutting down the light rail and et cetera, was the same group who the previous day had woke up Yes, they did. And ABC has really been on top of it. They have Perez, one of their key reporters, has been brought in from Chicago. There was a major story day before yesterday. There was a major story early this morning. There will probably be a couple more stories coming from ABC, which is, you know, waiting, if you will, for what could be a fuller eruption with regards to the disposition of the African-American community with regards to the actions of the county attorney. The county attorney did what many of us who are part of the old guard, and particularly those of us such as myself who are historians, that it was quite clear that with the exception of a African-American police officer, actually two, people tend to forget the African-American police officer discharged his weapon at a car that tried to back over him. The county attorney actually a year ago indicted that officer. He had to stand trial, but, you know, it's one of the few times that a jury with at least one black person on it acquitted that African-American officer. People don't talk about that, if you will. That's rather interesting. But in the case last July, a year ago, a African, quote-unquote, officer, a Somalian officer who had been on the force just a little less than a year, shot and killed a Australian national, if you will, Justine Dorman, which is supposedly her married name, though she is not married, if you will. She is a native of Australia. We talked about that quite a bit last year with regards to the kind of undercutting that was going on by members of the Minneapolis Police Department, white, if you will, who were attempting to put forward the worst possible profile, not only of Officer Nord, but the remaining seven Somali officers. In fact, the matter is, since then, one has been fired, and we're actually down to six Somali officers. We've never been any higher than nine. But Officer Nord got good legal representation, and consequently, he has, quote-unquote, been driving everybody who wants to see him hung up by his neck, kind of driving them crazy. We would, from our observation post, that Officer Nord will not come to trial until sometime in 2019, if you will, and there's no telling what the condition of the city of Minneapolis will be with regards to race relations. Now, let's speak on this to both our international, domestic audience, local audience, and etc. We are on the abyss. Folks can play the game, as we said earlier in this broadcast. The media can choose to shrink, quote-unquote, those events that are taking place, such as the demonstration yesterday and even the driving out of his own conference room. The county attorney, Mike Freeman, a Democrat running for re-election, if you will, the son of a former beloved governor of the state of Minnesota back in the 1950s, Orville Freeman, but Mike is not really the man his daddy was, if you know what I mean. And so there is a very dangerous situation now beginning to emerge in this city with regards to relationships between communities of color and some white sympathizers and the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, some sources are saying to me that the white officers are prepared to tell city officials to chuck it, if you will. They are prepared to criticize the city council and etc. I'm not sure that the validity of that is as strong as people would like to make it appear to be in that regard. But we are moving towards a crisis situation. There is division. There is division. Let's be very clear with regards not so much to the change of the charter, but as we move in now to the events surrounding of the tragedy in which our Thurman Blevins lost his life on the 23rd day of June. But all of this becomes critical because the corporate world, which there is a powerful faction if you will, base, if you will, let's just say that, that exists in this state, if you will, and in the two major cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and etc., who expect that things will be orderly, if you will. In fact, we submit and maintain that there was intentionally no specific information put out as the city of Minneapolis prepared to host the WNBA, the Women's National Basketball Association. Money was coming into town, a hell of a game, if you will. Congratulations to Maya Moore for being the MVP in the game. Over 15,000, almost 16,000 in attendance in an arena that seats about 19,020. Great crowd, if you will, for a women's sports event, if you will. But clearly, the powers to be, and we repeat that again, the powers to be had made a decision that they should keep a lid on this, began to minimize what was happening. Now, everyone, as we speak tonight, from our base here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, are pretending that the county attorney had already made a decision sometime late last week, if you will, maybe even early, and that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the BCA, who was handling the investigation, had allegedly turned over their findings, if you will, to the county attorney, Mike Freeman, Hennepin County attorney, Minneapolis being the county seat of Hennepin County, if you will, that the information, the investigation had been turned over to the county attorney, and that a decision had already been made. That is just absolutely untrue. And I would kind of hope, or maybe I would kind of wish, that the supporters of the Blevins situation, as well as other factors, would speak a little bit more with a little bit more clarity, that this story broke when Channel 5, KSTP, a part of the Hubbard Broadcasting Empire, broke a heck of a story because they had gained access. And we're going to talk about it now for a couple minutes as we move into the Blevins tragedy, if you will, and the determination that officers will not, we repeat again, will not be charged with any capital crime. But last Thursday night at approximately 10:01 Central Daylight Saving Times, Channel 5, KSTP, here in Minneapolis, went on the air with this breathless announcement by their anchors and etc., that they had gained access to a private video copy of the death of Blevins in an alley in North Minneapolis. Now, contrary to what folks are trying to say, people did not know, except those in close proximity to the power structure of KSTP. In fact, Paul McEnroe, who used to be an investigative reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune newspaper, who went over to KSTP a couple years ago, Paul, got to hand it to you, buddy. You really caught your colleagues off guard. Actually, for 3 days after the broadcast by KSTP showing a controlled video, but letting you listen to the statements being made by the police as they chased Mr. Butler, and the profanity, the anger, and et cetera, that came from the voices of the two police officers, if you will, Officer Kelly and specifically Officer Smith, if you will, was, you know, certainly predicated upon anger. But we would submit and maintain in this corner that when they got out of their vehicle there on the corner of 48th and Camden, they had already psychologically, I want you to understand this, that psychologically they had already issued a death warrant for the death of Mr. Blevins, though he was not to die until almost about 2 minutes later. The predicate, if you will, the reason, and of course it will not be looked at, that these officers were so enraged, and you could hear it in their voice as it pertains to as they were approaching the soon-to-be-deceased Mr. Blevins, it was quite obvious that their mood had changed, and the reason was is that they had they had surmised, based on what they saw, Mr. Blevins sitting on the curb, Caucasian woman with a baby carriage, with a two-year-old child, and a dog, if you will. It is quite clear that these officers thought that this African-American, who had been identified in the 911 call as being intoxicated and firing a weapon in the air and in the ground, had taken hostage a Caucasian woman and what they certainly would have thought was a white child. You could hear it in their voice because, and we will only use this word once, if you will, but it was uttered at least 8 or 9 times by Officer Schmidt as he propelled himself in the foot chase, already having made the determination that psychologically he and his partner had issued a death warrant for the culmination of Mr. Blevins' life. They thought that Mr. Blevins had taken a white woman and a white child hostage. Now, even though they put the mother of the two-year-old child, who also happened to be the significant other of Mr. Blevins, who was there attempting to get him to calm down, to give up the gun. Oh, yes, he had a gun. And there were many of us who were deployed on the night of the 23rd to the events and that went on for hours, over 8 hours, on the corner of 48th and Camden, knew that Mr. Blevins did have a weapon, if you will. For over a month, 38 days, he waited for some decision with regards to the quote-unquote body cam, but also the dash cam. You couldn't put much faith in the so-called statements that were being brought forward by some folks who said they were witnesses who actually did a lot of damage to the credibility and the momentum, if you will. Because in the day following the assassination of Mr. Blevins, there were two Pacific gatherings in which in excess of 300 people gathered to offer prayers and condemnation of the manner in which Mr. Blevins died, if you will. There are two families that were involved here, though they had been intertwined for many, many years. The Moore family, in which the father, Thurman Moore, was a member of, and then there was the Blevins family, and of course, the deceased, his mother, was a member of the Blevins family, consequently, his last name, Blevins, if you will. In the hours immediately following the death, the assassination of Mr. Blevins, if you will, and people are now saying that you know, that he brought it on himself and et cetera. I'm not sure that there's really any further need to debate that because he is certainly gone. He's dead. He won't come back, as the very powerful Bishop Richard Howell said in a quote in the Minneapolis Star Tribune yesterday's edition of the paper. There are factors that have emerged that just began to continue to raise serious questions about the authenticity of what the heck has happened and how real, quote-unquote, this scientific / forensic evidence and information, because between the time that Mr. Blevins was shot and killed and the mayor and the DCA and the county attorney were forced to take an action, if you will, after the private. I want to make sure that people understand in this town that it was the private video showing the incident in the alley and where you could hear, quote-unquote, the audio and et cetera. It was Channel 5 that forced the hand of a lot of the prime players in this specific situation. Yes, it was. And we certainly as a society have been really reluctant to indicate that was the driving force. The mayor had initially, and now we're going to deal with some dates because it's so important for people to understand what happened once the Minneapolis Police Department by virtue of an agreement that had been made back in 2015 after the shooting death of Jamar Clark in North Minneapolis, just two blocks from the 4th Precinct Police Station. The political decision that was made by this city, by its mayor at that time, and others, that perception was that Chief Madera Arredondo had some way or another caved in. He had no choice because a previous political institution called the city council and the mayor at that time had indicated that they would refer all cases of officer-involved shootings to the BCA. BCA is one of the most crooked entities in the state of Minnesota. And let me do this for those of you out there that are saying, man, what is this cat talking about? You know, why is he doing that? Well, you know, you need to know your history because obviously you don't know. In the situation pertaining to the death of Jamar Clark, people tend to forget there was a witness, an outstanding witness, a man who was standing about 30 feet away, right across the street in a direct line, as Jamar Clark was shot to death, if you will. Now, this is Jamar Clark. This is November of 2015. In fact, Jamar Clark's father was on one of the television stations 2 days ago on the so-called, you know, two-year kind of anniversary, per se, of what happened, because it was about indicated that there would be no charges, if you will. Mr. Copeland is the gentleman's name, and it was one of the damnedest miscarriages of justice that always almost happened. If it had not been for two specific people, his probation officer, Mr. Copeland, had problems with the authority, but he had been living the straight and narrow, if you will, and as a very functional member of our community. But most importantly, it was his probation officer and a district court judge, white district court judge, who would not allow the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who manufactured evidence against Mr. Copeland, to send him back to prison for 19 months. And it was really unfortunate, the quietness in this community when that was made known, when information came forward, that talked in terms that the DCA in the case of Jamar Clark had tampered with information and had tampered and attempted to coerce and bully witnesses, if you will. And for people out there, so that one is clear that, you know, folks is talking from fifth-hand information, I was with Mr. Copeland when he was interviewed. This had been basically confidential for a long time because it was clear that no one really wanted to deal with it. When Mr. Copeland gave his statement relevant to what he observed in the course of the events leading to the death of Mr. Clark, if you will, there was DCA officer, his name was Special Agent Olson, you know who you were, and an FBI agent, which was an interesting twosome, if you will. But what happened was Special Agent Olson of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension attempted, working with the county attorney, Mike Freeman, to have Mr. Copeland reincarcerated for the remainder of the 19 months. In fact, things got so bad is that, and we talked about it on this program, so on demand, you can go back and get the account. What this commentator is saying now, we said it back in 2015, if you will, that an effort was made, charges against Mr. Copeland, and send him back for the remaining 19 months of a sentence that he had been excused and had been allowed back into society. Mr. Copeland continues to stay strong. He continues to do his thing, if you will. Now, I'm also going to take some of you back, and this is to, so that it helps folks understand and remember the kind of unfortunate situations we have had in the relationship between the African-American community and law enforcement in this city. It's not anything that we're making up. We're not trying to create a charged atmosphere and et cetera. It's just the fact that there's just a lot of black folks in this town that have grown tired, weary, and in some cases angry about the facts that indicate clearly, concisely, without equivocation, the life of black human beings is irrelevant in the course of law enforcement in this city, irrespective of the job that Chief Arredondo is desperately trying to do, because he is being undermined. And you see, there is always this hope that there will not be somebody out there, such as this commentator, who will talk to you, call it out, and will challenge any statement of repudiation, if you will, or challenge with regards to what we are saying. The lives in this city are meaningless. We are not considered to be humans. We are at best considered to be three-fifths of a human being, as pointed out by the Constitution of the United States of America, as ratified by the so-called white founding fathers at Convention Hall in a place called Philadelphia. Yes, yes. We just don't have the guts. We don't have the heart to indicate to ourselves and to the broader population that attempts to join with us and support us and vice versa, that it is a finality, if you will. It is a danger, if you will. It is a consequence of relationship that is predicated upon life, that one can guarantee if nothing else happens. Two things are automatic. The sun will rise, the moon will set, and police in the city of Minneapolis will kill another black person, and percentage-wise, an African-American. I mean, it's just the way, my friends, that it goes. Don't get upset with this commentator. Do not be angry with us, if you will. No, 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 no. It is just a fact of history. We have seen it. I hear people trying to talk in terms of it within the time frame that they know, but a person of my millennium goes back much, much, much longer. I well remember when police officers blew the top of a young black man's head off right there at 7th and Oak Lake. See, for those of you that don't know where that's at, that's right there on the corner by the Metropolitan Transit Bus Depot, 7th and Oak Lake. Next time you go down 7th Street, you know, as you're moving up towards Olson Highway, a block and a half before, look off. If you're coming from out of North Minneapolis, look to your left. You'll see a little street called Oak Lake. There, an African-American by the name of Sel Saron Scott had the top of his head blown off after police put a shotgun to the back of his ear and pulled the trigger. And what happened, these were some very significant and important police officers. In fact, one of the female officers later became a reporter for one of the television stations and now still works as public information officer for the Minneapolis Public Schools. You know who you are. The others, in the case of David Neva, who was head of that special unit that was beating and killing African-Americans back then, if you will. In fact, there was a letter. There was a letter that was sent by a so-called anonymous source, but the individual left a print on the letter in which the individual spelled out the reason that Sel Saron Scott, the top of his head, was blown off, if you will. And I know we don't necessarily have, we're down to about 23, 24 minutes. I know how difficult it is for people to want to deal with that, but then in the more modern, we had Tysel Nelson. The officer that blew him away is a lieutenant in the Minneapolis Police Department and is making so much money working overtime out of the 5th Precinct that people just shake their heads. But he does what he wants to do. And yet he placed a gun next to Tysel Nelson after blowing his brains out and forgot to check if, in fact, the gun was in the mechanical condition to be fired. He got out of the trunk of his automobile a gun that had dirt in the barrel. Oh, I mean, come on. You know, there are those of us within the African-American community that go back a long ways with respect to what we have seen happen. But what begins to happen is that legacies are created, if you will. I know that there is no respect for the intellect of the sons and daughters of the African. I understand that. As a 79-year-old African-American who has been out here fighting the battles since 1958. I mean, I understand it. I know what it is. The situation, you understand, with Thurman Blevins is over with as far as people are concerned. You know, people are talking about other things already. They're saying that he brought it on himself, if you will. Could be. I'm not sure. How would we really ever know? Because we really don't have the necessary institutions as the black community to research and to challenge the authenticity, the narrative of quote unquote the other community, if you will. And so tonight, to our international audience and to our domestic audience and even those here in the Twin Cities locally who still have any interest, you have to understand the history. One of the things that I've seen Nakima Levy Armstrong, by the way, embracing the name of her husband, if you will, is that Nakima does her research. She has credentials. She was a professor of law at one of the most prestigious private institutions in the United States, St. Thomas College. She does her homework, if you will. She researches. You know, whatever you may say about her, she goes out and attempts to get the facts and the information. Now, right now, as I speak, on this broadcast that is going out across the world and the nation, et cetera, there's a decision being made in Washington, D.C. before the United States Supreme Court. Now, some activists here have tried to pick up on it. In fact, there have been a couple of rallies and memorials for a young man that was killed 5 years ago. And for 5 years, the city of Minneapolis has vigorously, though not necessarily successfully, fought this case coming to trial. The death of E.T. Franklin. A tragic and violent situation. A situation where a man was beaten and et cetera in the basement after allegedly, possibly, notice the word we use, possibly coming close to running over a white female officer and her statements and et cetera. At the beginning of the year, based on information given to us by the attorneys of Terrence Franklin, we talked to our community via the medium that we are in control of, television program, newspaper column, radio programs, and et cetera. And we said, you need to familiarize yourself with some of the allegations that have gone beyond allegations, because the trial judge in the case of Walter Franklin, the father of the deceased, filed 5 years ago with the federal courts that in that particular matter, the trial judge agreed that the case needed to go to trial. It was appealed by the city of Minneapolis to a 3-member panel of the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals who concurred. The case should be heard by the trial court. The city of Minneapolis did a heck of a thing. They appealed, which is rare. You really take a chance as it pertains to your relationships, if you know what I mean. They appealed the decision of the 3-member panel and asked the entire 9-member 8th Circuit Court of Appeals to hear their appeal. 8th Circuit turned them down and said that the decision of the 3-judge panel will suffice. The city of Minneapolis a year ago, 2 years ago, because all of this was happening during the 2016 election, so the newspapers here didn't cover any aspect of it. The news media did not cover it. The only person that covered it is this journalist that's talking to you now. And what happened was, Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals said, no, we will not hear it, and we'll go back to the trial judge, which means it has to go to trial. The city of Minneapolis appealed to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court will have to make a determination. And that is, if they concur and side with the city of Minneapolis, the case will never be heard in the matter of the death of T.T. Franklin. If the second option is applied and they decide to just dismiss it in its totality, it will be dismissed. But if they decide to send it back to the trial judge, there will have to be a trial. Can't you envision, given all of these unfortunate tragedies of African Americans losing their lives at the hands of law enforcement in this town and in St. Paul, can't you imagine having so many of these circumstances and situations? Because the Clark family, though the media really hasn't talked about it, has, quote-unquote, filed a lawsuit, and because it is their feeling that there cannot be successful negotiations with the city of Minneapolis. These are things that are being kept from you. Now, let me say this as we move into the final 9 minutes of tonight's program. I thought that it was disrespectful and sad that the major white medias in this town chose to make it appear that there was just one family, the Blevins family. And I understand that Mr. Blevins was a member of the Blevins family, but he's also a member of the Moore family. No one talked about the Moore family. It was the Moore family that went out and got Judge Hatcher, to take the case, take a look at a couple dates. Shooting takes place on the 23rd. On the 26th, the mayor of the city of Minneapolis indicates that he's prepared. He had seen him. We knew that. We knew that that night out there dealing with a situation of over 100 people, you know, really ready to throw down. But we knew that the mayor had seen the video, if you will. He knew what had happened, if you will. Other high-ranking officials of the police department had done that. But by the 26th and the 27th, the mayor said he was going to release the videos, if you will. Now, you understand that at that time, none of them knew that a determination was being made by a private citizen whose camera on the side of his house had recorded the events in the alley. Okay? It obviously took some negotiation between that private citizen and KSTP, if you will, and ultimately that tape in the last 12, 13 days was handed over to KSTP. And last Thursday, KSTP, broadcast and showed the tape. But beyond that, no one wanted to give any credit to the titanic responsibility, even though his department was no longer in charge of the investigation because of a political decision made in November and December of 2015. Chief Arredondo really couldn't even speak. But what happened was he received a request from some members of the Blevins family to meet with them. We can tell it now because the investigation's over. Everyone said the investigation's over. You know, that's the end of it, blah, blah, blah. Chief Arredondo on 27th, which was a Friday, it was a Wednesday, the 27th, met with the family. In fact, they met at the site of the death of Thurman Blevins. Chief Arredondo, who no one is giving any credit for anything, met with the family. There was a discussion. It is the prerogative and the privacy of the family and Chief Arredondo to indicate what it was, quote unquote, that was talked about. But we are aware of that. We are also aware that a couple days later, on the 29th day of June, around 1:20 in the afternoon, Chief Arredondo attempted to reach out to the Moore family. Moore family declined the offer by the chief to meet with them and to sit down with them. At the same time, by the way, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reporters, specifically Randy First, who is a longtime friend, I've known Randy for many years, had also requested a meeting to talk in terms of the position of the Moore family. Now, going back a couple of days to the 27th, the Moore family had already retained the services of Judge Hatcher. Her Atlanta office had signed, had drawn up the agreement, and et cetera, and it was consummated. That's the reason last week some members of some parts of the family were at a special facility of the Minneapolis Police Department in Northeast Minneapolis. And that's where, as the mayor said in his press conference on Sunday at 8:45, that he had met with some elements, some remnants of the family. Yes, yes, they did. That's when, to my surprise, the good judge, quote-unquote lawyer, jettisoned her clients. So you see, the Blevins family and the Moore family don't have any legal representation, though there is representation for the children. And there had been conversations and requests to the Star Tribune specifically, and a black reporter at that newspaper to, quote-unquote, at least write about this. It let folks know that there were two families, that there was a rich history, particularly with the Moore family, if you will, of the three aunts that everyone was talking about. Do you know that two of those aunts worked for the city of Minneapolis before they relocated to the West Coast almost a decade ago, if you will? The other one worked, for the Urban League of Minneapolis. But we were told in a certain way that that wasn't relevant, if you will. What was relevant were those people who unfortunately were making declarations and saying things that unfortunately were not consistent with the truth, and the BCA, the good old BCA, the same BCA that tried to put a key witness in the Jamar Clark case back in the penitentiary for no other reason than the BCA's agent, Special Agent Olson, lied in an affidavit to the court. But if not for the public defender, yes, the public defender that represented Mr. Copeland and the judge, Judge Quam, Mr. Copeland. And Mr. Copeland is a modest man. He really doesn't care really to talk about this, though if you get in his face and you ask him about it, he'll sure tell you what they tried to do. They tried to put him in jail because of the knowledge and the information and the witnessing of the death of Mr. Clark. And so tonight in our beloved city, a city that is embattled, if you will, under siege, the divide, my friends, is growing deeper and deeper and deeper as it pertains to race relations. I know there's been criticism of the mayor, if you will. Of course, that goes with the job, goes with the task, goes with the responsibility, if you will, and should be driven by strategy. In the case of Chief Medina Arredondo, for those of you on the city council who is early as late last year, as it was being discussed of who would succeed Jhené Harto, shame, shame, shame that you have worked this hard to conspire to take his command away from him and to quote-unquote take control of the Minneapolis Police Department. We say it in our newspaper column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. 14 bosses? Yeah. Why? That is the situation that we are faced with as we go into the last minutes of tonight's program. Hopefully, there are still enough of you left out there to call for justice, no matter what the circumstances seem to be. Oh, by the way, I find it interesting that it wasn't until 38 days after the shooting there in North Minneapolis, that a shell casing, which allegedly came from the gun that Mr. Blevins had, was, quote-unquote, had been found, if you will. But we repeat again, just as the sun rises and the moon sets, you can rest assured that there will be another African-American within some particular period of time that will lose their lives at the hands of Minneapolis police. I mean, we're not beating up on them. We're just taking a look. It's one of the reasons that we have given you, and it's gone back as far as 20 years ago. Yeah. By the way, there's an old retired officer. He was a hell of a detective in the century. His name was Russell Kruger. For those of you that may know him, if he's still alive, God bless him. Ask Russell Kruger about what he found out during the course of investigating the death of Sal Saran Scott, a man who actually was killed for no other reason than he made a mistake at a place called Moby Dick's of talking to a white waitress being courted by a member of the very deadly operational team that was dealing with quote-unquote street violence in Minneapolis. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of y'all out there that know the narrative. I mean, come on, y'all. You know, Sal Saran Scott was targeted. It's just like Tysel Nelson was already on the hit list as a young Negro that was out of step and out of his place. This is a part of the history. You see, it goes across lines. It goes across millenniums and different, quote-unquote, faction identifications and et cetera. There is just, for a city this small per se and a black population even smaller, it just is frightening. What will happen to African Americans in the future? And so tonight we appreciate the fact that hopefully you have stayed with us as we've talked about this. We don't want to forget what happened this afternoon in what became a very heated series of conversations in the city council chamber. There were some of you who took on Cam Gordon and that secret group of individuals who want to remove the African-American chief of police, Madera Arredondo, who has served with distinction and with certainly effectiveness as best it can be carried out, as he is being undermined by some of his own troops and particularly Police Federation. Well, we appreciate you listening to us this evening, and certainly we will be back next Wednesday with a continuation as events take place. Let me say this. Let someone offer a prayer for the future of young and old African Americans, both male and female, and their future relationship and survival in the city of Minneapolis. God bless you, and we'll be back next Wednesday. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don Program.